the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another edition of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. I'm Len. Joey is off this evening. He'll be back tomorrow with Mike Campbell. So if you want to tune in for that one, it's going to be a good one. I think that's going to be starting up around 7 p.m. But let's not talk about what's happening in the future. Let's talk about what's happening right now. I have Scott Deedles coming on a show, and we'll be talking about a lot with to do with finances, Bitcoin, pensions, and everything along those lines. But before I bring Scott on to talk to him about these topics, we have a couple of sponsors I want to bring up. Number one, we have EasyDNS, and we've been talking about them fondly for quite some time. This is the people that dealt with us when we started up our website. We were website newbies, and they took us by the hand and guided us through the process. Now we have our very own website. Check us out, CanadianBitcoiners.com. And it's all thanks to EasyDNS. They helped us usher in into actually being part of the World Wide Web. So you want DNS services? They got you covered. They got it there. It's in the name. It's EasyDNS. If you want to do your email migration, well, you don't have to use your old Gmail account. You can have a fancy email that is tied to your own domain so you can not only look, but you can appear professional when dealing with people out there by having your own personalized email. You can build your own website with the assistance of EasyDNS. And of course, I mentioned that this is a company that we use to set up our website. So it works really well. We can tell you firsthand they are good because you know what? They've been around since 1998. That's a long time to be in business in this game. A lot of other companies have come and gone. And the reason why they have left is because the services they provide obviously were not up to par. But EasyDNS, they still survive and they still thrive. And they're private, they're fast, they're secure, but not only that, you could pay with your Bitcoin. So if you want to use your Bitcoin and encourage a circular economy, EasyDNS, they're going to help you out with that. So check them out. Second sponsor, Bold Bitcoin. And it's a great place to buy. And you could sell your Bitcoin if you want to, but why would you? The price of Bitcoin is still rather depressed. Maybe wait until it's 2 or 3x's before you're considering selling your Bitcoin. But what you could do with Bold Bitcoin, you could pay your bills, which... yeah, and you're kind of living on the Bitcoin standard at that point. You could buy gift cards with your Bitcoin, continue living on a Bitcoin standard just the way Satoshi wanted you to do. You could buy your on-chain, you could buy your Lightning, or if you really want to do something a little bit different, you could get the Liquid. They also have that option. So you have a lot of different options over there. Finally, the KYC-free Bitcoin. I talk about this fondly for quite some time. There's a reason why I talk about it fondly is because they have the cheapest spread in the game with respect to KYC-free Bitcoin. And this stuff... other countries out there, other Bitcoiners throughout the world look at Canada with envy because Bold Bitcoin has enabled us Canadians to get KYC-free Bitcoin rather easy and rather cheap. 6,000 locations in Canada you could use to exchange your dirty fiat and get KYC-free Bitcoin. I'll obviously use your referral code below. Don't be a no-coiner. And by adding yourself to the Bold Bitcoin team here by using our referral code below, well, $20 is going to be added to your account. But that's... all the formalities. Let's bring Scott Deedles on the show. Scott, buddy, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. Now, for people who are unaware who you are, who is Scott Deedles? Give us a little background about who you are.
Yeah, good question. I'm a Canadian financial services professional. 15 years in different aspects of mostly employee benefits and pension plan stuff. I got interested in Bitcoin through benefits and pension in the spring of 2020. I started to wonder about money printing and what it was going to mean for pension portfolios, specifically the big, huge chunk of that that is made up of bonds. And eventually, I sort of turned off Netflix and started reading economics books. I read Jeff Booth's Price of Tomorrow. And that was the book that I credit with starting my journey along this stuff. Since that time, I've become super passionate about trying to merge mainstream financial literacy and Bitcoin literacy, particularly with financial advisors. Earlier this year, I self-published a book called Bitcoin for Financial Advisors, which was really just born out of a piles and piles of conversations I had with industry colleagues trying to make sense of what is this thing and how does it work and why does it have any value and what backs it and how could it matter in the mainstream lexicon of traditional financial planning. And I'm just getting set to launch my own Bitcoin business, which I'm really excited about to announce today. It is called Block Rewards. And Block Rewards is going to be the first company of its kind that I know of in Canada that is kind of merging a number of different services to do with compensation and benefits. So Block Rewards is a company that is pay your staff in Bitcoin, reward your staff in Bitcoin, help your staff save in Bitcoin, and really merging kind of the two sides of the how you would do it as a company and the why you would do it as a company.
That's a lot to digest. So let's go through your author side first. So the this is you're the author of the book called The Bitcoin for Financial Advisors. And did you self-publish this, you mentioned?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It turns out anybody can write a book. And
a good one, though, that's successful. I guess that's a different thing. And let's try to make this one successful because, well, number one, where could people buy it if they want to get this book?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. So, yeah, it's the only thing I have on there in the store. The book itself, you know, it's I tell people all the time, it's really not meant to be the best Bitcoin book you can buy. And there are tons of better books. What it is meant to be is a book that's written by somebody in the industry for other people in the industry. So Bitcoin for Financial Advisors is really a book that was inspired by all these failed attempts to orange pill people who have a lot of background in this stuff. And what I've really found, you know, talking to financial professionals a lot is there's just it presents extra problems in helping people understand like why this innovation is relevant. And so what I really tried to do was reverse engineer all of those failed orange pill attempts and turn it into a really short read. And that's what the book became.
How long is it? You say it's a short read. How many pages?
It's a 100-page read. I think, you know, you could crank through it in 3 or 4 hours if you were motivated.
In terms of how much data you accumulated before actually started writing the book, like, what was the journey for this? Like, at what point in your Bitcoin journey did you come to the conclusion, I'm going to write a book? And how long ago was that?
Yeah, you know, it kind of all happened pretty fast, to be honest. Like, I was, I had taken some time out of the industry and was, I spent some time working for Bitcoin Well in Canada, based out of Edmonton. And we were, among other things, you know, I was talking predominantly to advisors about doing Bitcoin sort of private placements. And I thought it would be easy, to be honest. So, they, you know, the timing was not ideal. This was kind of the summer of 22 into the fall. So we had Celsius crash and the FTX crash. So the sentiment was really bad. But, you know, you start to see same kinds of objections and the same kinds of, you know, the basic concepts. So in terms of when I started thinking about writing the book was really during that time. I'd done all the research already, to be honest. Like I love, you know, I think like a lot of people who are probably tuned in, Bitcoin's just such an interesting topic. And beyond, you know, there's so many aspects of the philosophy of it, the esoterics of it, the finance part of it, the technical part of it. So, you know, I think like, depending on what you're interested in, you can spend as much time as you want just looking into Bitcoin stuff. And I have a hard time myself even finding out how much time I can make in a week to listen to different pods. And yeah, so when I decided to write it, to be honest, that part was pretty easy because all I do for fun is read Bitcoin books and listen to Bitcoin podcasts and waste my time doom scrolling Twitter.
This is not going to be your last Bitcoin book, or you said this is enough is enough? Because, you know, usually when you write something, you tend to have something else you want to bring to the table and to write. And because the first one, it helps you understand what's the process for publishing. You self-publish, that's quite a big accomplishment. So you now have a lot of experience with this. You're going to be writing more, aren't you?
Yeah, there may be more. You know, I never aspired to be a writer like at any point in my life, and I don't really consider myself one, even having done this. So, but yeah, I think that the experience of doing it, and now, if I get so inspired, I'll totally write a second one. I, you know, and I'm still thinking about revisions to the first one. So there may be future versions, even just to try to continually improve it. Like, one of the things is that the book is really written for Canadian financial advisors. So it probably should be called Bitcoin for Canadian Financial Advisors. And so if there's somebody in the US who's listening to this and wants to collaborate on making it for a broader audience, for example, that would be something I'd be really interested in.
And not only that, Europe as well. I mean, it's a global thing we could look at. So I'm going to put the link for this book in Amazon, sorry, the Amazon link to this in the YouTube show notes, and I'll have Joey put it in the audio side. So hopefully we could drive some traffic for people who want to buy it and they could easily find it. So, but I want to now move over to the blockrewards.ca website. That's another website that's currently in the notes right now, and I want to ensure it's still there. And this is compensation of benefits where you're paying staff in Bitcoin. Let's talk about this, because this is something very, very unique, and I don't think a lot of companies are taking advantage of this. And for a number of different reasons, because they look at the price of Bitcoin and looking at go up and down, it may detract people from wanting to pay with Bitcoin, but it also may detract from people accepting Bitcoin. But what's going on right now in the world, the financial world, it's burning, right? And this thing is, it's eventually it's going to collapse. When, we don't know. The thing is, it will collapse, and that's going to be a huge mess. But I really want to talk about this, the blockrewards.ca. Let's go to the very beginning. What is it? Like, how did you come to this idea, and how did you start it?
Yeah, so initially how I became connected with Bitcoin Well in the first place was Bitcoin Well was offering something that they were calling Bitcoin Savings Plan. And, you know, I feel like when people get really interested in Bitcoin, the next thing they do is start relating it to their own personal expertise they have in life. So if your expertise is like gas heating, you know, these are how people get into mining and all these other things. And my expertise happened to be, like I said, I found Bitcoin in the first place because of how I was thinking about pensions. So it's pretty obvious to me that Bitcoin has a massive role to play in compensation and benefits for a few different reasons. I think one is obviously, as being, it's going to be a great performing asset. And if you're using it either as part of a savings plan or as a to augment traditional salary and bonus compensation, you're creating something that could potentially be supercharging anything that you can afford to offer. Like, companies are under pressure to raise salaries as inflation rises, but the companies don't have an endless budget to raise salaries, right? So one particular, you know, this is an avenue that could get you a lot more juice out of the orange. I think that, you know, these things start to matter when for employers, when they start missing out on hires because some company across the street is doing something that they're not. And this is going to be something that is normal. It's not normal today, but it will be when the rubber will hit the road, when you know, a company sits down with a preferred candidate in an interview, and that candidate's sort of deciding factor is whether or not they can include taking a portion of their salary in Bitcoin. And it's going to happen to every company eventually. And every HR person, anybody who's doing hiring, is going to kind of have that moment where it's the first time they've been posed that question and they don't know how to answer it. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that it makes sense to, as a company, if you value the work that your staff are doing, you want to reward them with the best money that's ever been invented. And as employees, like for Canadians, I want everybody to be able to earn Bitcoin in their jobs. And I just think it's, I mean, it's so cool to be a part of it.
100%. And Boomdust, previous or former co-host, and he'll probably come on again to be co-host whenever there's an absentee in the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. He writes in here, even if pensions aren't ready to buy sats or Bitcoin just yet, it's important for them to have the infrastructure in place. And as well, he mentions education is key, because this is something that's very important. It's one thing to be ready to do it, but it's another thing to have the information and ready to execute on that. So educating people and giving them the tools in order to bridge them the gap in terms of getting payment from previously in CAD, and now it's going to be, or it's going to be the future, Bitcoin, that's a big thing. So the infrastructure, what do you recommend then for people? Say an employer wants to pay their employees, an employee even in Bitcoin, and if it's a portion of Bitcoin or their whole salary in Bitcoin, whatever it could be, what would you recommend, or what would be your advice in terms of the infrastructure required in order to facilitate the payment from, well, instead of CAD for Bitcoin, to the individual?
Great. Yeah. So Block Rewards is the infrastructure. So paying your staff in Bitcoin is not something new. Like Bull Bitcoin does pay your staff in Bitcoin. What is new, or what's different about Block Rewards, is sort of combining the expertise. And I think that, you know, part of what I've just discovered in doing a career of benefits and pension is that organizations, they don't come to these decisions without external help. And so this is part of the reason why I think, and there are lots of reasons, but that there isn't a particular service provider in this space, and now there is. So, in terms of the expertise, the handholding stuff, I think it happens on both sides. So you need to be able to support a roadmap within the company with their decision makers and their, the people who are in charge of designing compensation structures and bonuses and all these things. And you also need to be able to educate staff, plan members, why they would want to do this and what choices they might make. And I've been doing this for a long time. So I've been in many rooms educating people on the portfolio choices that they have available to them inside their pensions. And so, there's a lot of commonality. It doesn't matter if it's, Catholic churches or machine shops or barbershops. People have the same sort of basic questions about these things. And I think that, if you really zoom out, including Bitcoin in this conversation, really isn't that different. It just seems a lot different today.
So Block Rewards, do they have an affiliation with a particular miner or exchange out there? I know you mentioned Bitcoin well, and we've had Adam on our show many times here. So we're very familiar with Bitcoin well and the people behind it. So I'm wondering, what's the behind the scenes, if you could give us anything, how it is that you could help facilitate Satoshis to go from, well, the network itself, the Bitcoin network, to the employer, and then ultimately to the employee.
So I don't think this is private. Adam would probably tell you too. Bitcoin Well was looking to transition out of the Bitcoin savings plan. And this is kind of how Block Rewards started. So they had let me know that this was going to be something they were sort of looking to mothball. And to me, this was always its own company. Like, this idea of really kind of a Bitcoin benefit. This is like what Swan's calling the Bitcoin benefit plan. It's its own thing. This is a really super specific niche service that requires a real focus. And so Bitcoin Well does a lot of cool stuff really well, but I think that part of the issue is companies, when they're making decisions about this stuff, they sort of have a similar process of decision making tree about how they go about implementing these things. And hopefully what we can do is tap into, understanding how that works. And that's what I see it. That's where I see it going.
You're fighting a battle here that is kind of challenging. I mentioned it in the chat, is because it's bear market right now. So in a lot of cases, it's an uphill battle, but it's still a good time to not just educate others, but it's also a good time to sharpen your teeth as well. So when the time is right, you could execute it and really take advantage. And the question I have now has to do with taxable events. Now in Canada, I'm not sure how it is in other parts of the world, but Bitcoin, when you buy it, it's fine, but you're taxed. The capital gains is taxes applied when you sell it, or capital losses, taxes applied when you sell it. So you have to note exactly how much it is when you purchase it and the price of Bitcoin in US dollars or Canadian dollars when you sell it. Is this something that is going to be a hindrance for people to take Bitcoin as compensation? Because to me, it seems like a little bit of an administrative headache, but it's a necessary evil we have to deal with. CRA says we have to do it, and so we have to abide by the recommendation. So is this something that is causing people that I think maybe they're having headaches with it and is preventing them from adopting Bitcoin and taking it as salary?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what your attention is for how long you're going to hold and sell. So it's definitely a hindrance for people who might consider taking 100% of their salary. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, like that's not a lot of people. Like probably even in the Bitcoin community, that's not a lot of people, would be my guess. So if we're looking at some sort of portion of salary, you know, if it's a 10%, let's say you're taking 10% of your salary and it's done at source, that's just a really great way to pay yourself first. And it's the same way that any other employer-sponsored savings plan would work anyways. So in terms of the taxable events, we take the Bitcoin purchase after you've already paid all your payroll taxes, like after all of your deductions have been made. So there aren't any events again until you decide to depose it. Yeah.
And in terms of appetite, what's people saying out there? Are they receptive to this idea? Are they at least listening? Because let's be honest, the world, I mean, they're saying it's, you know, 3%, 4% inflation in Canada. And we question those numbers almost on a daily basis. So looking at Bitcoin, even as a normie, they have to say, this might be an alternative here that I could take advantage of. But what is the appetite out there? Is this something that is growing or is it stagnant? Like, I want to hear your thoughts because you have boots on the ground.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is niche scenarios where people are really excited. And I think that, well, you know, one obvious one is Bitcoin or businesses. So like if the CEO or the owner, you know, when you have people in leadership positions who've understood Bitcoin, that is obviously probably one of the key factors. Or if there's a key person who's requesting it, you know, then it's kind of done as an accommodation. Like these are things we're seeing. There are some other sort of, you know, scenarios that make sense. Companies, we have in Canada, a lot of companies that need foreign workers to make their businesses work. So if you're running a coffee shop in Fort McMurray and you're bringing in, you know, Philippine workers, so these are scenarios where, again, it could also make a lot of sense because sending, you know, as you know, wire transfers are super expensive and super slow. So Bitcoin makes and the places where people may be sending money back home could very likely be places that are a lot more Bitcoin normal or friendly. So that's a great example. But I think I really think we're not that far away from a time where enough people start to understand, like it's only going to have to go on so long where Bitcoin, you know, holds a certain price floor or resumes its march up, and we're trying to build a lot of reports that will give people an idea of, you know, historical performance on different timeframes to help make it a little bit more exciting.
You've touched on something and I never even clued in on it. This people coming in, foreign workers or even newly landed permanent residents in Canada, and they're sending money back to their native country because they still have family there. And I guess using Bitcoin for remittances rather than Western Union, where they take a slice of the pie and the recipient in the end gets a lot less. So Bitcoin eliminates that problem. So that's something that I never really considered. So yeah, that's definitely a market out there. Question from Boomer, and he has a good one here. In terms of people, the employer or ultimately then the employee taking the sats, is it going to be in non-custodial straight into a wallet, or how is it done? Because over here at the CBP, we talk about it fondly. One of the fundamentals that makes Bitcoin a great alternative to many other digital assets out there is the fact that you could control your own keys. The network is immutable. No miner can collude to take this away from you. So as long as you're able to securely control your private keys, you control your financial future. So I'm wondering how it is that you recommend and how it is done in the real world with terms of custodial services.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm right there with you. So, I think ultimately how people decide to store it is going to be their own choice. But our company stance is fully non-custodial. So we're not holding on anybody's assets. We're really just a vehicle for organizations to interact in helping their employees participate in a mass Bitcoin buy. So, we do provide lots of education services around, you know, like especially for people who are new to the idea of where do you even start with wallets. But it's non-custodial.
Yeah, it's a difficult concept to wrap your head around in a fiat environment, and we're now generations into this, to understand that if you lose your keys, you lose your money, you lose your Bitcoin. In the fiat world, if you lose it, I mean, they somehow, if your, say your credit card is compromised, oh, no problem. They could create it, and then you're compensated and you're made whole again. Same thing doesn't happen in Bitcoin.
It's about building a culture of personal responsibility in your workplace. Mm-hmm. So I think that, like, you know, as an employer, what a cool thing to be able to introduce is this concept that requires absolute personal responsibility. And I don't know a lot of successful organizations that don't think that's a worthwhile, you know, thing to have embedded into the fabric of how your organization functions.
Yeah, it's a wonderful trait. And if this could be replicated and done so on a mass scale, it can make companies way more, not want to say profitable, productive is probably a better way to say it. I just want to slightly change gears here. I would imagine you attend events with other financial services colleagues out there. And when you do so, and given eventually the topic comes up, what do you do and your connection with Bitcoin? There's got to be a lot of no-coiners out there, and they're looking at you with a cocked eye. They're saying, what is he doing? Is he's trying to essentially wreck his clients? I mean, am I correct in that there's a lot more no-coiners in this field because they're just stuck to the old fiat ways? Or are they listening? Are they paying attention?
Ooh, yeah. I think like a lot of things, there are pockets of people who would be nervous about coming forward and being public Bitcoiners. So there are some, and I have met people quietly at events who kind of know what's going on, but there's definitely, for every one of those, there's 8 or 10 people who think it's total heresy. And, you know, it's all of these different ideas that are really just rooted in deep misconceptions of what Bitcoin is. And I had a tweet thread going on for the weekend. I had this really crazy interaction with a financial advisor at a wedding, and so somebody, I tweeted about it, and somebody was mentioning, like, it's for a lot of people, it's as though they think the white paper was written last week. You know, like this thing is already, I love, my favorite Bitcoin quote is Michael Saylor's quote about how if you took the most valuable product in the world and stripped away all of the obligations and risks that come with the company, you would have Bitcoin. And most of the time when I'm talking about financial advisors that don't understand, they just haven't comprehended the scope and scale of the level of investment and ingenuity and how sophisticated the base layer of protocol itself is. Like, this is probably the most significant invention in human history, and a lot of people think that it is vaporware. It's crazy. But yeah, so I get a lot of. And, you know, I think that there's two other things. One is, you know, most financial advisors, what you really want to not do is screw up, and you don't want to lose people money. So people are fairly, I think rightly, you know, they have some consternation that is rooted in good intentions. But part two of that, that's also a real problem, is Bitcoin is going to make a lot of these traditional financial instruments absolutely obsolete. And it, you know, it's already a better performing investment than basically everything, but it's going to fundamentally alter just the way planning works as we start to move into times where it's really demonetizing other stores of value. So, like, there's a chapter in my book about why scenarios where I think even for people who don't believe in Bitcoin makes a lot more sense than real estate. And I love talking about real estate, and then that's a topic for a different time. But
no, we'll talk about it. It's a great topic, and it's something that it's pertinent to a lot of people. There's a great swath of people in Canada that are homeowners or even investors that they have more than one home, and they're renting out their second or third, fourth, fifth property out there. So, and given what's happening, for those who are unaware, Bank of Canada today decided to hold rates steady. So I think the overnight lending rate is sitting around 5.25%, somewhere around those lines. Historically, that's not really that high, but if you compare it to where it was 2.5-3 years ago, it's extremely high. It went up in a very, just like everywhere else in the world. And this is nothing new. So a lot of homeowners over here are feeling the pinch. For those that are Americans listening in, you guys are lucky because you get a mortgage for 30 years in Canada. We tend to do five-year mortgages and then renew. So what is the overnight lending rate at that five-year period? When your mortgage expires, you're going to have to renew, and then you're subjected to a lot of swings, be it up or down with respect to the interest rates from the Bank of Canada. So real estate is something that a lot of people over here, they're looking at with a keen eye because they're looking at the price of the asset go down. Price of Bitcoin has been relatively flat, I would say, for the past 6 months. Actually, it's been increasing, but I'll say it's still flat. So you need a house to live. You can't live in Bitcoin. So what are your thoughts? And I'm just trying to lay the groundwork here. I'm not pro real estate. I'm not anti-real estate. I just want to hear your thoughts about what you think about somebody. If they have extra money out there and say they're renting and they could maybe move into a house. And I know the landscape right now is pretty tough in terms of the high interest rates, but things are going to change hopefully in the near future, or they should hopefully. What would you suggest they do? Is Bitcoin a better alternative for them or something like real estate?
Yeah. I mean, those are obviously, it's a huge question. So, you know, I'll just sort of like give that as my disclaimer. Some of these things.
It's all not financial advice.
Not financial advice. And it depends on whether or not you already own a home. Because it's true that you can't live in your Bitcoin. For me, I have owned homes like forever. And when I really started to understand Bitcoin and when I really started becoming concerned about raising interest rates and inflation in Canada, I decided to sell my home and I use the proceeds to buy Bitcoin. Nice. So this is why I feel like, you can think I'm crazy, but this is personally what I did do. So I feel very fair to talk about it.
Sorry to interrupt. Are you married or do you have any children?
I'm divorced, but it has nothing to do with the strategy of...
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I think that you have to think about your time frame. So if you're thinking about comparing real estate and Bitcoin as an investment, and a lot of people in Canada have a really optimistic view of real estate because basically it's been sort of up only for 20 years. So a lot of the market participants have only known conditions that go up. And markets are a mix of fear and greed. And I think, things may be starting to turn now with this last few months, but we really have in Canada like an absence of fear, which is what should, as a market participant, scare you, in my opinion. When nobody's afraid, that's when things can start to get really crazy. And I think that, what's different between Bitcoin and real estate is that people need to be able to afford houses. Like Bitcoin is really still kind of an optional purchase. It's a choice that people make. People can make the same choice with real estate, but you do need to live in something. So a key difference between Bitcoin and real estate is that people do need to be able to afford real estate at some point. So unless everyone's going to become a renter, and maybe that's kind of a different topic. I think that if you're thinking about zooming out, and I had somebody ask me about this the other day, they were kind of talking to me about buying a property, a second property, be an Airbnb. And I was like, you'd be crazy to do that and not buy Bitcoin. Bitcoin's down from its high, but like Bitcoin, just to get back to its all-time high, if you're investing in stocks instead of Bitcoin, the S&P 500 would have to do like a 7% return for 20 years just to match what Bitcoin could do in like a few good weeks. And, obviously this is not financial advice and who knows what Bitcoin's going to do. But when you start to understand the mechanics behind what drives Bitcoin price appreciation over time, like unless it breaks, unless something really changes fundamentally with the underlying protocol, like it's built to go up forever. So over longer time frames, real estate could even appreciate and end up being a really great asset. And I still have a hard time seeing how it's going to be better than Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is much scarcer than real estate. Like with your thinking about real estate, you're thinking about who might be a potential buyer. Like what's your market for buyers? And like I live in Kelowna, it's 200,000 people. We get buyers from all over the world. People want to live in Kelowna. But there's still the market for potential buyers in Bitcoin is 8 billion people, and every company in the world, every endowment, every charity, every government of every size. So the market is much bigger. It's much more liquid. You can sell a Bitcoin in seconds. You can sell a house in weeks. Like there are a lot of reasons why, and Bitcoin is tiny, so it's still like I think Apple is six times bigger than Google, or sorry, Apple's six times bigger than Bitcoin. Like, so in terms of what you might be able to accomplish from appreciation, it's hard to see housing. Like houses can go up, but if houses go up six times in Canada from here, you know, we're all going to be living in boxes. Like, so I have a hard time to see that too.
Money is extremely broken. It's broken now, but if it goes up six times, yeah, it's money. Because the price of a home, it's just reflective of the purchasing power of the dollar. And the price of the homes ripped in the past 2-3 years. And then it came down a little bit in the past, say, 6 months or so. But that's all reflective due to monetary policy more than anything else. But it's still showing that it's still the money does not have as much purchasing power as it did in previous decades. The house remains the same. It's just there's more money chasing the same houses out there.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, part of that will change as there becomes a broader symmetry of information in the market and more people start to get comfortable and understand the idea that Bitcoin actually can store your monetary energy. So the number of people who think that today is really small and the number of people who feel that way about housing in Canada is super high. So even if you just think about that sort of starting to equalize over the next, and not 6 months, I'm talking about 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And this is where even Bitcoin investors, you know, zoom out, like way out. If there's 14 million coins in circulation and 2 million on exchanges today, like what's that number going to be in 2050? And, you know, I think with Bitcoin, because when it rips, it's so exciting and the upper pressure is so big that everyone wants to, if you're not rich immediately, and I have friends who bought Bitcoin, and just because it hasn't doubled in the last year, they feel like it's a total failure. And I mean, it's like, but if it's whatever number it is, if it's done a significant appreciation by the end of the decade, by any other investment, you'd be thrilled. And so, you know, like all of these things, we're in this really weird period of time where, the ideas around how you invest in Bitcoin need to kind of grow up for the most part. And I'm not talking about individual people, but just sort of like broad sentiment.
Yeah. And with Bitcoin, it's for me, it's not really number go up. I just don't want whatever I store my wealth in to go down. And I believe Bitcoin is going to accomplish that. I think it's going to maintain or at least appreciate in value relative to just about anything else. And the housing market, you touched upon this earlier, the being agile. If you own a home, it takes, as you mentioned, several weeks, and that's being generous to sell the house. In some cases, it could take much longer than that. And then once the money clears, it could take several months because of possession date and so forth. So there's a lot of nuances with owning a home. You just can't pick up and leave and take that with you. It just not work like that. Bitcoin, I mean,
as an investment property, you have to deal with renters, you have to deal with maintenance, you have to deal with taxes. Like there are a lot of different events that can erode your real returns, and there's risk. And there's risk with Bitcoin too, for sure. But I think that, you know, people don't realize, in my opinion, the risk with Bitcoin is that it breaks. And that's really the only risk, because everything else, if it doesn't break, it's built to just sort of chug along, and more people are just going to figure out what it does. And that's what you just need to be able to weather the price bumps up and down. But that's not risk, unless you're taking a personal financial risk to do it. So if you borrowed money to buy Bitcoin, you need to pay that money back. That's a risk, but that's nothing to do with Bitcoin. That's your own choice. So I think that, you know, the relative risk between the two, and this is where I talk about too, another scenario I'd be really thinking about is, it sounds risky, and again, it's not financial advice, but if you can't afford to get into the market, I would be saving my down payment in Bitcoin and dollaring in. And eventually your down payment may be actually enough to buy a whole house. Like the price of a house in BC in Bitcoin was 600 Bitcoin in 2016. And in 2022, it was 40 Bitcoin. You know, like if this continues, 2028, it might be one Bitcoin. So take a long-term view. If it's important to you to own a home, this is a time where I think, you know, if you're creative and you have some fortitude to weather the ups and downs, you might be rewarded.
That's an interesting strategy, but remember, for people out there, you're going to be subjected to capital gain. So if you're going to be playing that game, make sure you put in the equation the capital gains, because that's something you're going to unfortunately have to pay when you do sell your Bitcoin, convert it to Canadian dollars and use that to purchase a home or anything else, in fact. And yeah, the long-term horizon is definitely something that we have to take into consideration with everything with respect to the price of Bitcoin. Greg Foss has always talked about how much money is in the markets, per se. I think he's saying it's around $100 trillion has been slushing around in the markets. This is with bonds and equities and everything along those lines. And if you just want to just talk about housing in Canada, how much money is in put into there? And even if a portion of that gets redirected towards Bitcoin, and you mentioned there's 14 million Bitcoin in circulation, a couple of million-ish in exchanges right now. And that number, in terms of being held on the exchange, from what I understand, at least, I don't have any firsthand information. I'm looking at Glassnode here. It's going down. So eventually that number is going to be going down to zero. And then what happens? It's going to be a price shock, and the price of Bitcoin is going to go absolute bonkers. Plus, you know, you have other things coming out like a Bitcoin ETF, and, you know, it's that's going to be a real driver in terms of how much Bitcoin's out there, but also in terms of how much people want to get exposure to Bitcoin. And there's a lot of things, a lot of positivity when looking in the next little while. And even taking all that out of the equation, they're printing money, or at least borrowing more money and just adding more liquidity into the system. And this debases the currency, and Bitcoin has to go up in value. I mean, I'm just looking at that. But with all that spiel said, the 60-40 portfolio, is that dead?
I think so, yeah. And I just, you know, I love what they're doing. You mentioned Greg, and I'm a huge fan of Greg's. I've been listening through the Nakamoto Portfolio Gauntlet podcast, where they take a look at pensions and they sort of reverse engineer the optimal Bitcoin allocation inside that portfolio. And so I don't know what the mix is. Like, I don't pretend to have the answer. I think the first step really is just to say that it's not zero. And, you know, we're at the point right now where it's not getting anybody fired, but you can't continually exclude the best performing asset ever from a portfolio. And I say this from a real position of like, when you're involved in setting up pensions, and you know, the members really, they're at a disadvantage for the most part in terms of how they need help to navigate the choices to be made. And so this is the first step is really for the broad kind of industry to understand this thing is legitimate. It is very robust and secure and has a strong likelihood of enduring and outperforming. And so then when you couple that with this idea of like, there are some serious macro headwinds against bonds. This was 2022 was the worst year in 100 years for the 60-40 portfolio. If inflation accelerates, if money printing accelerates, it's going to really, really kick the real returns on bonds in the teeth. So like this isn't going to change. Like, we need to start thinking about something different, or pensions are going to be in tough. I mean, the other thing too is when inflation sets in, we are seeing salary adjustments, and salary adjustments can really play with pension payout calculations, because some pensions lean heavily on your earnings over the last 5 years, for example, something like that. So if we're seeing income adjustments, the performance is going to have to come from somewhere. And that's where you see, you know, like Ontario Teachers taking these things, like these, you know, riskier sort of crypto investments. And it's been going on for a while, but the issue is that decision makers, I think in today so far, have just felt like investing directly in pure Bitcoin is riskier than some of these other things that they've done. And hopefully the BlackRock ETFs will really, really change that. I'm hopeful that that's going to be one of the positives that comes out of this.
It's going to educate a lot of people about Bitcoin, or at least what it's all about. And I'm kind of skeptical it's going to turn people into Bitcoiners and use the properties that make Bitcoin, you know, like as I was mentioning earlier, the custodial aspect of Bitcoin. But I guess it's still a step in the right direction by at least giving them some exposure in some tax efficient vehicles as well to buy an ETF. And
right, in Canada, I mean, for sure, the ETFs inside tax sheltered vehicles can be really great, even though they're not real Bitcoin.
I want to talk about the pensions now. I'm going to come from this from a different point of view, and I'm just pretending I'm managing a pension fund, and you want to try selling me on Bitcoin. Is let's be honest, right now the markets, they took a bit of a dive in the past 3 months. It's been red hot. I'm looking at stuff like Apple, I'm looking at stuff on Microsoft, you know, some of the bigger companies, Nvidia, and so the markets are doing pretty good, but generally things as a whole are not doing all that great. You know, the price of goods, the price of fuel, the price of just about everything has gone up. So although the markets may be doing pretty good, you're going to be spending more just to make ends meet. Plus you have longer lifespans. People are living longer and longer. So that's, it's a bigger draw on pension. So going back to me being managing a pension fund, I don't, but I'm just, you know, hypothetically I do. Sell me on Bitcoin, because I want to maintain a conservative focus on this. And I am thinking maybe that the market's going to turn for the better. And my approach of having a little bit of exposure, or maybe a little bit more exposure to bonds and 60% in the markets, it might be a good strategy. So sell me. Why should I have Bitcoin exposed on my balance sheet, which will in fact expose my members, and they're drawing more and more money, and for a longer period of time, because they're living for much longer. Like, give me the sell for this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's looking at more from the lens of the risk you're taking by not doing it. When you're not exposed to Bitcoin, you're short it, and the potential for long-term overperformance is so high that you really don't need to take a big swing at Bitcoin to potentially really change the performance of your overall plan. So I don't think it's going to come out of the 60, you know, if we're talking about the equity portion of an allocation like today, I don't think so. So, you know, the conversation itself is more around what are the challenges that bonds are facing right now, and why is Bitcoin a viable alternative? Like, what are we do that by thinking about, you know, dispelling these ideas, misconceptions around what Bitcoin is, what it does, how small it is, how big it can get, you know. And Greg, to go back to Greg, right? Like, Greg's got this model where he talks about a realistic valuation of 2 million US per Bitcoin. Like that's a hundredfold return. Like if you return a hundredfold on 2% of your portfolio, and so the idea, I think, is when I tell people Bitcoin's going to, you know, cause, and this is me again, this is not financial advice. I certainly think it's going to hit that number, and I think it's going to march on and hit much higher numbers beyond that. Again, no idea on timeframes, but I have no problem saying that to somebody with conviction. But for people who don't know anything about Bitcoin, astronomical price targets sound insane, and they get people riled up. So back to your thing way earlier about when I talk to other advisors or people in the industry, if you tell people you think Bitcoin is going to be $1 million by the end of the decade or whatever, that's when they start to get really, you know, irritated. Because if that's true, yeah, that's also going to divert a lot of money away from, you know, like this is the scenario I'm talking about earlier, where it's like, well, why would you take on the risk of investing in a company like Nvidia when you have something that now has a 28-year track record of mostly going up and outperforming everything? You know, like, so I think that it is still really early days. The information, there will be a broader and broader symmetry of information, and more people are going to start to understand this. And part of it's going to be because it's just going to get harder and harder to ignore. So once these ETFs come in, you're going to see different ETF products. You're going to see ETFs where there's, you know, a mix of Bitcoin and gold, Bitcoin and treasuries, Bitcoin and the market in mixed portfolios. The same way you might be able to have a 60-40 portfolio, you may be able to get an ETF that's just an ETF that's, you know, 60% of the market and 40% of Bitcoin. And these are going to be things that the performance on those products, if Bitcoin continues to chug along, it won't matter if people, like, you're not going to have to sell anybody, because they'll be the best performing ETFs on the shelf.
It will sell itself.
Right.
It will be its own marketing tool.
Yeah.
Boomdust writes in earlier in the show, I wanted to bring it on, but it wasn't a good opportunity. The 60-40 is still alive. 60% Bitcoin, 40% beef. I love it. So yeah, that is a great way of looking at it. So I want to, well, getting close to wrapping things up, I just want to touch on something that we didn't really touch on just yet. You're also the host of the Block Reward podcast. Is this correct?
Yeah. So I've started the Block Reward and we haven't launched it yet. I've recorded a few episodes that are just sort of in post-production right now. Block Reward's a little bit different. It's kind of like Bitcoin for financial advisors. So I wrote the book because the book that I wanted to give people didn't exist. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do with the Block Reward. What the Block Reward podcast, part of the goal is to really help people see how Block Rewards, the company, might be of value. And so the Block Reward is a Bitcoin podcast for non-Bitcoiners. So we're trying to avoid terminology. We're trying to avoid, the best Bitcoin podcasts, the ones I enjoy the most, are the ones that where the hardcore Bitcoin people get together and just really geek out in full send. But when I try to share those podcasts with friends, or you know, they're almost unlistenable to people who don't go to bed at night with the Bitcoin Standard on their night table. So Block Reward are short conversations with Bitcoin personalities that are geared for people who really are not into this or don't have the background. And that's what we're trying to do there. So we'll see how it goes. It's funny, you know, I have a huge respect now for people. Hosting pods is a lot different than being on pods.
Yeah, you know what? I'm so familiar with being in the seat I am right now. Whenever I end up going on somebody else's show, it seems foreign to me, and I'm not used to being in that position, but it's good to be agile because that's the nature of the game. How many episodes do you have in a chamber? You said you recorded some of them. So how many are in the bank right now ready to be launched?
Three done. And then I'm recording one on Friday. And then when there's four, the production company, that I've got somebody doing it for me. And we're launching once we have four done. So Friday is Don Bay from San Francisco Fire Department, works with Swan, instrumental in getting the Bitcoin in their pension. So I'm really excited to talk to Dom, huge fan of his. And it's, you know, it's been so cool. Like Bitcoin community, for the most part, I've just been so amazed at how people are just eager to get on board and help other people. Like we're all just trying to get the message out and help other people understand what, I feel lucky. Like I read Jeff Booth's book that day and have been compelled to find other ways to, you know, talk about it without getting a drink thrown at me at a wedding.
I want to keep on this Block Rewards podcast because I want to give you as much exposure as possible from our, you know, millions of listeners over here.
Thanks.
So you're saying these are short conversations. How short are these episodes in totality?
I shouldn't say that. They're not that short. Maybe, you know, around 40 minutes. So it's harder to do it any shorter and have kind of a conversation with any meat on it. So yeah, the bigger idea is really we're trying to avoid technical terminology. I'm trying to have conversations that really can, again, sort of like the book, reflect gaps in terms of like the common things that I see where people who don't understand Bitcoin, what it is that they don't understand about it, why they think that something, you know, where these misconceptions kind of come from. And so I also think it's really cool. You know, Greg is a good example. Greg was one of my first three. And I watch every podcast Greg does because I love his mastery of the numbers and the different ways he cuts things apart. But you never get to see people like that answer really basic questions about Bitcoin and answer them for sort of non-Bitcoin audiences. So that's really what I'm shooting to do.
And so for people who aren't aware, this is another Canadian entering the market. So if you like Canadian podcasts, definitely check it out once it gets released. And I just want to plug two people to come on your show. I mean, take this for what it's worth. I hope cool. You take Jesse Berger wrote this book, so The Magic Internet Money. So he's doing a lot in financial services and talking about Bitcoin. So he's one plate licking pleb. If you he's on Twitter. He was one of the people that was. So those two, I'd recommend it would fit really well with your podcast. They understand the subject matter. They're very outgoing. They've been on podcasts. So a couple of guys and a couple of Canucks at that. So check that out. So
yeah, plate liquor. If you're watching, you owe me a DM. I think tag. We message here and there. So
okay, yeah. Awesome. So if you need any help getting in touch with them, let me know. I'll be happy to arrange that. But yeah, I mean, we're getting close to the end of this. I just want to then quickly wrap things up. Scott, if anybody wants to reach you, where could they reach you? And yeah, the floor is yours. You can talk about whatever you want. And yeah, take as long as you want. It's all yours.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So if you're watching and you are an employee at a company or you own a company and you want to take a look at any of these kind of Bitcoin solutions for compensation and benefits, it's blockrewards.ca. And you can find me through there. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm active on LinkedIn. I think it's a great platform for stuff like this. And I love to connect with people. I'm on Twitter. It's Lantern Bitcoin. The original company was going to be called Lantern, and we went through a different iteration. I like the name Block Rewards better, but I kept the Twitter handle Lantern Bitcoin. So you can catch me there. And that's probably it. And it's, if you wanted to email to me directly, it's scott@blockrewards.ca.
You know what? I do like the name Block Rewards better than Lantern Bitcoin. So I think you chose the better of the two, but that's just my two cents.
Better.
I like it better. So.
Yeah.
Scott Deedles, everyone, thank you very much for coming on the show. And for those that are still tuned in for the audio and video, Joey's going to be doing a episode tomorrow. That'll be Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern with Mike Campbell. So check that out if you are interested in that. It's going to be dynamites. And Scott, thanks for coming on the show. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you again for having me on.
Cheers.